Hey everyone, welcome to another Hyperspace Broadcast minisode. This is an episode where instead of covering something that aired on Toonami, we cover something Toonami adjacent. This week we are continuing our tour down, I guess, Yasuhiro Imagawa's other works other than G Gundam with Tetsujin 28, The Lingering Midday Moon. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
Really quick, I just want to say that there's probably going to be some background noise in this episode. My apologies. Someone is whistling and raking next door to me. So, yeah, hopefully that's not actually in the audio, but who knows? I can't really stop them from doing that. And
I think we're on probably kind of a almost tight schedule no way. Here. There's like no way it'll get picked up, so maybe keen-eared listeners can blast their volume to hear a whistling man in the background.
I don't know. You'd be surprised at what gets picked up.
Is he a pretty powerful whistler? Is he whistling through one of those like gym class whistles?
He's so got annoying. A megaphone. He's just raking and whistling through a megaphone pointed at my apartment right now. I think that's what's going on outside. Yeah, this is another thing by Yasuhiro Imagawa. Basically, this is sort of a sequel to his 2004 anime series. And, of course, this is all based on Tetsujin 28 Go, which was a 1965 manga written by Mitsuteru Yokoyama, who you might remember as the creator of Giant Robo. This is the original giant robot thing from Japan. Mm-hmm. It's basically the codifier of the genre.
And it was actually aired here. The like original show, black and white show, was aired here as Gigantor, you might remember, which I believe aired sometimes at the super late night on Toonami, or possibly Adult Swim. Like, what I mean, like the latest late, like 5 a.m.
Yeah,
before the normal cartoon block started.
I don't remember when it aired exactly. I want to say that it was on Sci-Fi Channel, actually, not Toonami.
Well, no, the actual show did air on Cartoon Network, and it was played like very late at some times. But in any case, I don't remember much of that show, and this is pretty, you know, seemingly kind of different. They definitely changed things when they brought over Gigantor. And this adaptation seems to take liberties of its own as well.
Yeah, and also the original series, from what I've seen on Wikipedia, I haven't actually checked out the original stuff yet, but that is tonally a bit different than the later works. Like, it's definitely a bit lighter in tone than this is, yeah, for example. But let's talk about the movie briefly. Just a little synopsis. So basically, the idea of Tetsujin 28 is that during the like last days of World War II, Japan was making this super weapon in order to turn the tide, and that super weapon was this giant robot, Tetsujin 28. So after the war ended, basically the scientist who built this robot handed it down to his son, Shotaro, who is 10 years old, yet still drives a car around. And so it's kind of the adventures of Shotaro and this giant robot as they foil, you know, the plans of evil people who have giant robots themselves. There's probably more to it than that, but that's what I've gleaned from, you know, just general knowledge of this series.
Yeah.
So in this movie, we are introduced to another character who is also named Shotaro, not confusingly, who is older. And basically, we have this kind of thing where both Shotaros are like, I'm not even sure how to explain it. The older Shotaro worked on Tetsujin 28, and so they both feel some ownership over it.
And they're both bequeathed it from their father, because they find out they're brothers.
Yeah, right. And yeah, and then meanwhile, there's like this kind of murder mystery plot with this bandaged up Japanese soldier who's going around killing people with a like military issue sword and leaving notes that Shotaro is not worthy of Tetsujin 28. And also there's some stuff with ruin bombs, which destroy cities, but not people somehow, although they have a trigger to destroy people as well, because why not?
Yeah, and Tetsujin's goal seems to be, like, programmed in him is to get the ruin bombs and excavate them and safely detonate them somewhere else, because there's tons of these bombs lingering under all of Tokyo, and, you know, any amount of them could set off and blow up, and some of them do.
Yeah, right, and they were meant as a weapon of last resort, essentially, to just blow up the, I guess, all of Japan instead of handing it over to someone in the case that they were conquered by somebody else. So it's a fairly interesting movie because I would say there isn't as much like giant robot stuff as I was expecting.
Yeah, hardly any.
Yeah, it feels more like a murder mystery a lot of the time. And I think it's actually pretty effective at that, honestly. Like, the, you know, the resolution, I was actually kind of invested at that point, after being a little disappointed that there wasn't so much robot stuff. But I don't know, I actually like this quite a bit, I think, in retrospect.
I disagree with that, or I have a different opinion, at least. I thought it was a little irritating that there was, like, almost no giant robot action happening at all. And I'm okay with, like, a movie or a show taking that course and being like, okay, we're going to do something else with it. The Patlibor movies, for example, go in wildly different directions that have nothing to do with police robots.
Sure.
Some of them do. There's one in particular. It's like, oh, it's just like a monster mystery based off of loosely one episode. And you like see the main characters from Patlibor like for a second.
Right.
It's
right.
Really weird, but it was still kind of effective movie. In this case, I was pretty confused about what was going on. I usually can follow these plots pretty well, but this just, like, I don't know. I thought, like, the result was kind of confusing and elaborating on, like, who actually was the killer, and they kind of go over that over and over again, and, like, the loyalties of older Shotaro were a bit less clear to me, like his ideals and his reasons to, for example, attack his little brother and try and kill him.
Right.
It's, I get, because it's just like he's just needs to get control of the Tetsujin, I guess. There was, I just had difficulty kind of following the plot later on, and it really started to drag on for me as well. Like, to the point where I was literally saying, oh, just end already. Come on. I did enjoy the setting. And I remember there's a part where it kind of clicked for me, watching the all these little robots come out and attack him and attack the Tetsujin. And during the kind of like the big first big action set piece of the film. And I do enjoy like this post-war setting. It seems like a setting that a lot of anime tends to avoid. It's a kind of a pretty understandably difficult part of Japanese history.
Yeah. You
know, the loss of the war and the changing of tides and the large changing of culture and ideals and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, there is an uncomfortable nature of, you know, talking about World War II in general because of, you know, atrocities. So
yeah, right.
So it is a little weird to see something that, like, takes place directly post-war, and they're like, you know, former soldiers reminiscing about training as kamikaze pilots.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like,
yeah, oh, older Shotaro is like a kamikaze pilot who didn't die, and he was like apparently sent to war in order to get rid of him, or like he was supposed to die in combat, but he ended up coming back after being lost in the battlefield for some years, and then he came back after he was rediscovered. Still thinking he's fighting for Japan, kind of like that. There's a story about a guy in an island.
Yeah, that's pretty well known.
Somewhere in the Pacific, who was,
yeah, dude who wasn't aware that the war was over for years and years. Yes, Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's a little weird about it, is just like, I don't know, there is something slightly uncomfortable about, I don't want to say like fondly reminiscing about World War II, because that's not quite accurate, but like,
yeah. Well, he has moments too where he comes back and he's like, what has my country become, you know, and he's all pissed off about it, and it's like, you know, from an American's perspective, it's like, well, I don't know, like, what was your country back then? Like, there was some crazy war effort and stuff like that going on. Like, it's kind of a hard thing to empathize towards at times.
Yeah.
You know, it's like seeing a German soldier come back and he's like, oh, my country's changed. It's all ruined. Why aren't we like when we were Nazis, you know? Like,
yeah, right. I mean, that's really what it comes down to me, is like,
yeah,
there's something slightly strange about setting it so distinctly post-war, but seeming like, you know, I feel like most German productions about World War II have a very distinct, oh God, we are sorry, this was awful.
Yeah, right.
And this doesn't...
Whereas Japan, there's still a lot of Holocaust denial. That's it's very common.
Yeah,
it's really
right,
not
right.
Something that's, for the atrocities in Nanking and all across Asia.
Yeah, right. It's not...
Know, still to this day, cause a lot of grief and strife.
Right. And this has gotten very serious when we're talking about a kind of dumb movie about a giant robot trying to pick up bombs. But
it seems like that's like the main themes of the movie, though. It's like really set in this whole post-war situation. And the whole theme of the killer and all that, it's all got to do with it.
Yeah, right. So there is definitely
that. The
robot's
really just kind of tertiary. There.
Yeah. So there is that aspect to it, which is a little uncomfortable. I did end up liking this, generally speaking, though. I will, you know, of course, have that caveat. But I thought the murder mystery stuff worked pretty well. And also, there's just some weird stuff. Like, can I just point out that I've seen three different fucking names for this movie? Like,
yeah.
Because apparently no one has settled on a translation, and it's sort of irritating. Like, the movie itself says the lingering midday moon at the end, which makes sense. It's thematically appropriate,
sure,
because of a plot twist that happens later. But I've also seen it, of course, as morning moon of midday, which is what we introduced it as originally.
Yeah.
And then on Wikipedia, it's also referred to as the daytime moon. And why the fuck can't we just use the thing that the movie itself has in English at the end? Like,
yeah, that's true.
I don't get it.
Well, you know, probably trying to translate a word that we simply don't have, like a single word for that kind of moon, which is like, you know, the moon you see during the daytime. But I really don't know why it's got so much confusion behind the actual naming.
One final detail that I want to mention is that there is at one point an evil giant robot that just says monster on the front in English, which is,
yeah,
again, you know, really fits with the fairly serious post-war setting and,
yeah, of course,
that sort of thing. So yeah, I don't know. I guess check this out. Maybe, it's probably not necessarily the best example of Imagawa's
work. I'm more interested in checking out the source material too, and seeing how things differ, and like what exactly is different. Is there as much post-war stuff in that or not, and is that more of a political statement or some kind of thing about the state of Japan by the makers of this remake? I don't know.
Yeah, that is curious, because I mean, of course, the original series was made directly post-war, pretty much.
Yeah.
So,
the manga, yeah.
You would expect that it would maybe address that stuff a little more directly. I don't know. That's a good question, though. And we will eventually watch it, at least some of it, just for the Giant Robot Week stuff. But
yeah.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. I am curious to see what kind of differences there are, yeah, I suppose in the political leanings of the work. But anyway, we got to get back to G Gundam, a largely apolitical,
a very yeah,
stupid thing. Which at no point while watching it was I like, is this okay? Like,
well, that's not true.
Yeah, you're right. That's not
Tequila
true at
Gundam.
All. yeah, Neo Mexico in general. I was like, this isn't
it's got
good.
More problems with political correctness than politics in general, I guess.
Yeah, right. But
it's still a fun blast, and I can't wait to get back to it.
Right, right. So we'll be getting back to that. The final episodes of G Gundam. Ooh.
Oh no.
We'll see the crazy ass finale. and I'm excited about that. So we'll be getting to that next week. But until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week for G Gundam Conclusion.
Episodes 40 through 49.